Hola, mi nombre es Elias Torres, host of the American Dream Podcast. On this show, I talk to underrepresented founders and seasoned executives who have achieved their versions of the American Dream. We discuss what the journey looked like, the obstacles they faced along the way, and what they wish they had known when they started. Today, I'm excited to share my conversation with Sergio Monsalve, founding partner of Roble Ventures, a future of work focused fund investing $200K to $2 million in early stage technologies that enable people, teams, and organizations to achieve their most ambitious work. Sergio is one of the few Latino venture capital's firm founders in the United States. In this episode, Sergio not only shares how he built his firm, but he also explains the ins and outs of venture capital. Think of this episode like a VC math class. I hope you're learning something new. Thank you for being on the show, Sergio.
Hey, nice to meet you. Nice to see you, Elias.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
So definitely big fan of immigrants, especially Latinos that I relate to, that are doing great in this country, right? We have, as immigrants, we come with nothing, no education, no language, no network, no knowledge, right? And so what we want to do is share the knowledge that you have accumulated, because you're one of the very few, right, Latinos that has a fund, that has a firm, that is an investor. So let's tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what is an investor, how much you make an hour, you know? that's how I used to measure when I first came into this country. I would measure myself like, I make $4.75 at McDonald's, right? And then I made $4.85, and then I made $5.10, and then I made $6.25 at Bank of America as a teller. So I would always measure my income by hourly rate. So
that's funny. That's an interesting entry to the conversation, because that's something that I had to wrestle with when I first came to the U.S. and think about what I wanted to do. So it's
absolutely. So who are you? Where'd you come from?
Yeah, so just real quick, my background is I was born in Mexico and never had an intention to come to the U.S. Was born and raised and bred and with all my family down in Mexico, Mexico City, and all kinds of parts. What happened is my dad was a very curious entrepreneur, more of a sole proprietor, not necessarily a tech venture funded type of startup guy. He was more of a sort of serial entrepreneur of his own businesses. And so he started a business in Tijuana in the northern part of Mexico that sort of exported these chemical goods to the U.S. So there's paint, basically. He started a business around creating a type of paint that was more innovative and more durable and whatever else. So he started spending a lot of time in northern Mexico, and my family, it was just my two sisters, younger sisters, my mom and my dad, and I just basically I'd never studied English, and at 13 years old as a teenager, just sort of picked up and moved with seven bags first to Tijuana, and then we were lucky enough to get a visa, so we went to San Diego and had to learn English, had to kind of be a teenager in San Diego, which is, as a Mexican kid that, sort of going through the teenage years, is a very formative and very sort of tumultuous and hard time kind of assimilating to the culture, but was lucky enough to be pretty curious about school and about science and math primarily. So I really negotiated with my parents that I would leave for college, which is not a thing you do in Mexico. You always stay at home and you don't board like you do in sort of the traditions of Anglo-Saxon societies, British, the U.S., of course. In Mexico, there's no such a thing. So most Latinos that are from Latin America stay at home, right? So, my dad wanted to stay around near San Diego, but I did a deal where I would stay in California at least. So I was applied up and down the coast, all kinds of schools, got into Stanford and landed in Roble Hall, which the name of my fund right now is Roble Ventures, named after, obviously it's a big tree. It's a strong tree, but it's also the name of my freshman dorm at Stanford, which really gave me a lot of eye-opening experiences, because I came to Silicon Valley for the first time. This dorm was a very progressive dorm, had a lot of really interesting learnings that I picked up in my first year as an 18-year-old and, you know, in a new city and a new place and a very innovative place. Fell in love with Silicon Valley. You know, after that, I went to the East Coast because I studied engineering, but one of the parts of engineering that I really liked was how to make companies more efficient, sort of use engineering disciplines to kind of optimize processes, either manufacturing, shipping, it could be anything, service. So I did that, and one of the areas was how do you optimize via M&A? So I actually went to Wall Street because I was enamored with how to merge and acquire companies to make it more efficient. And so I did 2 years at Morgan Stanley as an M&A analyst. Then I went to Harvard Business School to kind of round out the business experience. And then I came right back to Silicon Valley to become an entrepreneur and an operator in various software businesses, which then, you know, combining sort of the Morgan Stanley experience, the engineering experience, the fact that I really loved investments, you know, just as a kid, I was enamored with Wall Street trading stocks, understanding the P&L and sort of the performance of companies. So that naturally led me eventually, as I did a variety of startups, started my own company, raised venture capital as my own founder. But then later in my life, I was invited to be a partner in a bigger firm, venture firm. So I decided to take it and really experiment to see if I'd be a good venture investor. Started 14, 15 years ago. This was Norwest Venture Partners. So I was there for about 12, 13 years. And was lucky enough to kind of learn the business the hard way. So very much of an apprenticeship business. And so I ended up going to, you know, making some good investments in the latter part of my career and was able to deliver a good track record, which is very rare. I think a lot of people sort of see the successes, but they don't see the many thousands of VC firms that don't really make it. And so the numbers, speaking to the numbers, I'm happy to kind of tell you.
Yeah. We'll go into that in a second. Yeah.
Yeah, but to finish the story on the intro, I went to Norwest, was able to do well, you know, was on the board of two companies that went from zero to IPO or a multi-billion dollar exit. And with that track record, I 3 years ago, I decided to start my own firm. The Roble Ventures, been running it for 3 years. We raised our first fund 3 years ago, and now we're raising our second fund, have 18 companies in the portfolio, much more focused on a theme investing around enterprise software future work, which has a lot to do with AI these days, but also I invest early so that I can help entrepreneurs really create good habits from the beginning. Because I think that the doing the reps, trusting the process as an entrepreneur, as you would know better than anybody, it's very important to kind of trust the process, because the results will come if you do the right things. And I think the right things start with the good habits from the beginning when you start a company. So I wanted to do that and sort of help people that way. And so I've been doing it for 3 years and so far so good. And very exciting to be doing venture in this time, because, you know, there's cycles, right? And this cycle is very interesting.
Holy shit. There's a lot to unpack there. I love it. That was a pretty intense, you just dropped a bomb there, a whole bunch of stuff. So many questions, but I'm trying to figure out where do we go, right? I think you have so much to offer. I think we could do like 10 shows with you, obviously, right? One of them is like, how do you walk into Stanford and just, you know, you get a degree there. But you should go back in and drop out. Like, you know, usually the Anglo-Saxon story is like, oh, I went to Stanford and dropped out. You're like,
yeah.
I went to Stanford and I got accepted. And you know what? I stay in there and I finish my shit. But I think that was intense. Congrats. Really proud of you. Much respect.
Thank you, man.
Because sometimes I will shit on like all these finance jobs. But you are a true entrepreneur, right? Because you kept coming in and out of the field in different places, not just to attach a name to yourself, but you were doing the work, right? And nothing proves an entrepreneur more than you leaving some firm and everything to start your own, because starting your own, it ain't as fancy as glam, you know, as what's it called? It's not fancy as people think. And I think I want to share with people, let's deep dive into your fund, because in my personal story, after selling Drift, right, you know, you have options. And so one of my options was, should I start a VC firm like yours, right? And start from scratch. And I had dinner with David Fialco, Larry Bond from General Callis, and they walked me through what is a fund, what is the life cycle of a fund. So, but instead of me telling that story, how about you teach us, right? So if people don't know, right, what is a VC? What is a venture capitalist, right? Tell us from your perspective, what does it take in the same amount of time like you did before?
First of all, when I started, I did not know. I just started. I thought it'd be great to just invest money of others and turn it into a big outcomes and make a percentage of that. Typically, what happens in a fund is that you take a management fee. You raise the funds from anywhere from pensions to institutions like corporates, endowments. You know, if you've been to any college, they have an endowment. They need to invest it, and they need to invest it in a way that diversifies their risk. So we tend to represent the riskiest part of their investments, while real estate and bonds and some other less risky assets are part of their portfolio, but they generate less and they take less risk. In our case, when you raise a fund, you'd probably typically in your investors' minds, you're the riskiest thing that they'll invest in, but also they'll generate the most return. And so because it's private investment, venture capital is a subset of what people call private equity versus public equity, right? Public equity is, you know, your stocks that you see in the trading floor. Private equity is more, you know, obviously companies that don't trade because they're privately owned. That could be anywhere from growth equity, big companies, leverage buyouts. Those are the kind of the big money investments, right? In our case, in venture capital, you could be doing early stage, mid stage, or growth stage. And so in our case, Norwest, we were doing sort of a little bit of everything. You know, we started with a smaller fund, but as the fund grew, we started doing bigger deals. In my case, I always try to gravitate towards the early stage. So when I raised my fund, which is first fund, you know, raised it from about 45 investors, anywhere from high net worth individuals, like I said, you know, in family offices, to the more institutional investors, what I mentioned. And so what you do is get a commitment that people will invest with you for about 10 to 12 years, but they're not going to see the liquidity for that amount of time. And so what you need to make sure that they understand is that you sell the opportunity, and you see they need to understand that this is an illiquid investment that eventually will deliver very high returns, potentially upwards of 25% IRR. So that's an annual return, which will lead, if you do the math, you could probably do anywhere from 5 to 6x your money over 10 years. What that does is that, you know, once you raise the fund, the numbers are simple. You take a management fee, which is how you run your fund for operations, for people, for, you know, so for lawyers.
Before we go into the fees, let's repeat that just for simplicity, right?
Yeah.
There is you did a lot, right? People should not overlook this, right? You had to get experience. You had to build up something. Some people want to just go and raise a fund just because they graduated from Stanford, like Latinos and everybody, right?
Yeah.
They think that is easy. You put in a lot of work, different organizations, different schools, different track record. How long you worked at Northwest?
Norwest, I worked about 13 years, and prior to that, I was an operator of 10.
You're an overnight success, right? It's just shut up and you got it, right? You good looks, good hair, and so so let's just make sure remind everybody that's what it takes. You can't just go like, you know, and expect people to give you everything. So now you decide to start a fund 3 years ago. You go to high net worth individuals. You go to this. Institutions, right? We can explain that further, but people can Google or ChatGPT, and you ask people, give me money that I won't return to you for 10 to 12 years, right?
Yes. That's a hard sell, yes.
That's the hard sell, right? And what do you promise them in return? How much are you going to return them?
Well, you know, there's no promising, legal promising, but what they can expect is that you, based on the risk you're taking, you should be able to deliver 20 to 25, 30% year returns to be a top quartile. Top quartile matters, meaning top quartile is you are among the 25% best funds in, and top decile is even better, which is what we're aiming to be, which is the top 10% of funds. And because
I give you $10 million, you're going to return me what yearly? You're talking about IRR, right? You're going to return
me. So IRR is just a way to kind of compound the investment, but that's all on paper until you exit the company, either because they got sold or IPO'd, and you have in my case, 25 shots on goal. So you have 25 companies. Most of them don't make it, or they deliver sort of money back or a single, but they're not big fund returners.
Let's say if I give you 10, what is the VC industry? We want to make sure legally you're not claiming any returns, but what I'm saying, but I'm an LP to you. I give you $10 million. Should I expect what at the end of 10 years to keep it around?
Well, I'll just tell you the numbers that I did deliver in the last 14 years. If you invested 10 million with me, I'd return 40, right? Of 45.
Perfect. So that's four or five.
That's my own sort of track record. But in this fund, I'm looking to do better. So if you give me 10, I would say, I think based on the size of the fund and our strategy and our thematic approach and our experience now, I think I should be able to return 50 to 60, right?
Yeah. And so that's the pitch, right? So people understand. Okay, so you're a VC, you go ask all these rich people and entities, right? And you go and say, like, look, by the way, all these people have a lot more money than 10 million, right?
Yes.
And so they're all like trying to diversify. They have a portfolio, and the market doesn't return those returns, right? Of 4, 5, 6x, right? Of what you have. And so they're looking for places where they can make additional bets.
And so you go,
you talk to them and you say, hey, give me 10 out of your 200 million, you know, net worth, and I will give you 50, right? And so that becomes attractive to them. And they say, I want to jump in with you and go along for the ride.
Exactly.
So that's easier said than done, but be it, you got the money. How much money did you get for the first fund?
My first was 26. My second is going to be 50. Perfect. And I saw three people.
You're solo. You're three people, right? So three people you go. And that's awesome, right? So you go, and not an easy feat at all for people to trust you, because you come in, you're new into the space, right? And they're like new as a firm. And they're like, have to make a decision out of how many VC firms in the US?
This is about 4,000 or so. Most of them, like I said, the top decile, top quartile, where most of the returns consolidate, most of them don't make those kinds of returns, right? So it's really, when you look at the whole universe, that's why it's risky, because it's very tilted towards the hits, right? So in seed investment, 65, 70% of your companies probably won't deliver any kind of significant return, right? Or potentially don't make it even beyond the product market fit, right?
Yeah, no, it's exactly. And so let's talk numbers for people, right? Because all people want to know is how much they're going to make. Let's say we can talk 50, or we can talk 100 million for simplicity, right? So if a fund is 100 million, right? Describe what happens. So this, you know, all these institutions come in and say, Sergio, you get 100 million. What happens?
So on that 100 million, what you need to be doing is really, first, as you pitch your investor, you got to really understand how you're going to actually construct the fund. So portfolio construction becomes so important. This is where experience matters. In our case, we're constructing the fund with 25 companies. We're deciding to sort of invest a certain amount in the seed, and then pro rata, meaning we'll invest more in the later rounds. But at some point, we will no longer invest. And so we'll be experiencing dilution just like everybody else. And so what you need to do is understand your portfolio construction. In our case, we're going to take 10% ownership, invest a certain amount into 25 companies, and then protect our pro rata over time, so that at the exit, you potentially could exit at 6-7% ownership after you get some dilution. So imagine you have 25 companies, not all of them make it. In fact, most of them don't. But the ones that do, you still own about 6-7%, like I said. So to return a $50 million fund, which is what we're raising in our second fund, you would need to have a company that, let's say, was sold for 800, 900 million, and then you'd return the whole fund one time, right? So that's kind of the math, the VC math. You need to have, in our case, which is what
So 50 million fund, you need one exit at 800, 900 million.
Based on the portfolio construction. Yeah, because...
I'm saying one. But the return from that does what? Does that give you 3X or 1X?
No, that, you know, this, let's say it's 800 and I own 7% of it. That would be $56 million back.
1X. That's 1X.
Yeah, so that's a 1X. But the thing is that the, what people say is like, well, can you do it three times and can you turn it into a $3 billion company? And then what I say is, okay, I have three companies that I've invested in that went from zero to a 3.5, 3.2, and 1.6 billion. So altogether, I delivered $8 billion in market cap in my prior experience. And within the portfolio right now in Roble, I do think we have probably already four or five that could be that fund returner, billion-dollar company, assuming they continue to grow, right? Because it's still
Of course. No, but this is good. Just so people understand, you know, nuts and bolts here. I don't know if that's the same, but the details, right? So
yes, that's great math. Yeah.
Yeah, so VC math, 50 million, one needs to be a billion. That makes you look good. You return the fund. You didn't waste the money. But now people want to make money. Right.
Yeah.
And so now the question is to get to that 3X, 5X, 6X, right? You need multiple of those. And that's why this is hard. this is what it takes. And so and it's going to take 10 years. So what happens with that 50 million for the 10 years? How do you get paid? Let's talk about that. How do you make money?
Yeah. So first of all, there's a 2% management fee usually. So that's basically every year you're taking 2% of the fund to pay your bills. But you have to refund those payments before you can take any kind of profit. So what you do is refund that. So now you're saying, okay, I'm going to return the what I grabbed from the fund for my expenses and return the capital that my folks put in, my investors put in. And then I start sharing on the profits, which is 20% of profit share at that time. So imagine if you do deliver on a $50 million fund to turn it to 6X, that's $300 million back, right? $300 million back. Let's assume just simple math that $50 million was the basis, right? So you made $250 million. And if you take 20% of the profit, you as a partner could make $50 million yourself, right? With your other partners, right? Because everybody's
sharing. Yeah. The firm. That's the money that comes back. Yeah.
But, you know, that takes 10 years to essentially share the profit of 20% with others. And you have to find sort of that diamond in the rough or that multiple diamonds in the rough to deliver that 6X, right? So you're basically playing, this is almost like people say, this is like baseball. You know, your batting average is going to be in the 200, meaning you miss 80% of the time, right? Or 300, right? So, but the thing is you got to hit a home run to be able to kind of score the home returners, right? And so you have to have a vision of whether the thesis and the founders and the market sizes that you go after are going to be substantial enough to give you a shot at turning that into a big company. And I'd argue that there's no better time than now, especially now with AI coming in the layers that we play in, the data layer and the application layer. I think we're going to be seeing some massive amounts of rewrites of software that could create another set of multi-billion-dollar companies, right?
Yeah, you're baiting me there. I'm trying to stick with the numbers and stuff, but I definitely there's different views on that one, right? But I'm biased. let's talk a little bit more about that. So the 2%, 220, the 2%, is that every year? Or split over the 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, you usually start a little higher because that's the investment period of 4 or 5 years. And then there's a harvesting period of 4 or 5 years, 5, 6 years. And usually you take more management fee when you're investing and less when you're harvesting. But the reality is it averages out to 2% over 10 years. So right there and then you're taking the 20% of the fund for your own operations. So you have to deliver not just 100% of your fund back, you have to deliver 120% back to be able to kind of get back to even, right? So that's the crazy math.
20%, right? So this stuff is hard, right? And people are like, oh, I want to be an investor and that kind of stuff. But let's summarize that again. 10 years, you raise a fund, you spend all this time asking people for money. They give you 50 million. You're going to spend 20% of the, because 10 times two, you're going to spend 20% of the money in operations so you can support yourself and the team and go fly, meet the investors, meet the entrepreneurs, convince them, dinners, events, marketing, hiring, salaries of your team, all that money goes there. That's the revenue, right? And then hopefully 20%. And so if you're lucky, you know, you get to return the first fund, right? And then if you're extremely lucky, you get to return money on the first fund, right?
Yeah.
And it takes 10 years. So what happens? You raise a fund and you 10 years. Do you sit around and just wait for those 10 years? What happens? Give me a little bit of the life cycle.
Yeah, it's almost like a waterfall, right? You invest, you have an investment cadence of, you know, in our case, one company per quarter. So four companies a year, over 5 years, that would give you about 20 companies. It's a little bit more. So 25 companies are fully invested by the time you reach your 5 year period. And then you want to continue to kind of monitor those companies, help them out, make sure that they're, you know, you're adding value as much as you can, because sometimes the best value you can provide is stay out of their way and just let them operate. And so you got to be very careful on how you're going to help the company and what you're uniquely positioned to help with. And then you monitor and you drive an exit, right? You help with the exit, which in my case has been IPOs and big M&As, right, to public companies. So those are the two major ways. You could also potentially tap into the secondary market and sell some of your shares to investors that want to buy more ownership, later stage investors. That's a great way to kind of create earlier liquidity, but you don't want to do it too early, right?
Yeah, because then you miss out on the gains that compound over time.
Exactly.
That's called DPI. What's DPI?
Yeah, distributed paid-in capital. So it's basically just the money that you distribute back to your investors, right?
That's the only thing that matters is when cash goes back to the investor.
Yeah, it's cash on cash. Like that's why I wanted to make sure that I had cash on cash, meaning nobody can dispute that there's money come in and money comes back in multiples, right? And you know, there a lot of people right now in the earlier stages, they have to do it on a non-distributed basis, right? So that's a different way to do it, and that's obviously a good indication of where you can end up, but that's not really where you end up, right?
That's not where you end up. And so what I'm saying, but then what I was trying to get to is more like the life cycle of you raise the fund, you spend how long does it take that, then how long to deploy, then how long to nurture, and when does your cycle begin again?
Yeah, raise the fund, it probably takes about a year for emerging managers, which are the smaller funds like us, a year, then you deploy it over 5 years. Then by the fourth year, which is where we are right now, you start raising your next fund. As long as you're doing well, you know, there'll be capital to raise another fund and layer it on. But, you know, you still have to manage the fund one companies to an exit. So you then have another 5 years to kind of manage, grow them and manage them to hopefully a successful exit, either an IPO or an M&A, right? So it's 5 years of investment, probably 5 to 6 years of harvest, of growing and harvesting. And then you kind of end the cycle of the fund, shut down that fund, and you continue on to others that have already been layered on, either fund two or fund three. And then you keep going, right? And there's some firms like, you know, like the one you mentioned, General Catalyst, has done an amazing job at raising, I think, 14, 15 funds. I forget how many they have. My ex-employer, Norwest, has raised that many at least, been in business for decades, right? So I think it's an ability to kind of continue to deploy capital and return capital over many, many years. The other thing, by the way, that we didn't mention is when you start your own fund, there is a thing called the GP commit. People don't really think about that.
Yeah, in my case,
I put in 5% of my capital onto my first fund, right? So imagine how much I'm one of my biggest own LPs, and that's a significant amount for me. So I am more invested than most of my own LPs, which is a big
one. Normally, it's like 1%, right?
Yeah, the minimum is about 1%. So if you're raising a $50 million fund, you need to kind of write a check to the fund of $500,000.
Right.
And so what happens there is that the reality of a founder of a fund, especially a first-time fund, a second-time fund, is that you yourself are putting more money in than actually the salary that you would take out. In fact, for me, I try to use my salary for my team, my systems. We're trying to create a VCOS that essentially it's an operating system that allows us to be much more automated than any firm that I know.
You and every VC says the same thing, you know.
I'll say this. This is a little pat on the back, but we did speak about this VCOS at the Affinity conference. Where they have every single VC out there, 4,000, I think they have. And they chose us to speak at it on our VCOS. So,
No, that's great. I just meant that everybody.
Better, I hope
it's a small space, right? It's a space that struggles because it's not that many firms, and they're not going to pay. But yet, all of you are like reinventing the wheel, right? With different product and engineering abilities to help you scale, because you can only support small teams with the fees that you have, right?
Oh, absolutely. Now, the other advantage, though, this is back to why you started this podcast. I believe that the face of the founders, the multi-billion dollar founders, is changing dramatically. And there are more established VCs out there that don't recognize the change. And we are uniquely positioned to recognize that change. So I'll give you an example. One of my biggest exits in my prior fund was the founder was a guy he didn't speak English that well and didn't pitch himself that well. And he would say that himself. And so he was an immigrant from Turkey, very smart guy. But, you know, I think a lot of VCs tend to have a bias against people that don't know how to present so well or can't speak English well. And for me, that was me. So that when you're actually betting on these uncommon founders, I think you have a unique position to be much more able to help them because you are one of them, right? And so if you believe that the world of successful entrepreneurs are going to look more Latino, more women, more immigrants, I do believe that we're better positioned to find those and win those deals because we are them, right?
It's really hard to build a VC firm, right?
And super hard. If it was easy, you know, everybody would be doing it. But
there's a lot of people that have a lot of axes. And I'm just saying the people need to understand the posers versus the real deal, right? And so you had to spend, as a Latino, whether it's a Latino or not, some of the people are born rich and they can, you know, have their daddies and mommies help them, right? But raise the fund and they have the network. But you had to work for 15, 20 years, right? To be able to know what the LPs, to understand the industries, to have wins, to have savings, but that's what it takes. You got to put.
Oh yeah.
You got to.
I mean, in my fund. Think about this, Elias. In my fund, I have 0.0% of money from my family, right? You know, while a lot of friends that I know that start funds at massive amounts, they're probably the contribution from their families or their family offices is upwards of 50% sometimes, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have a billionaire friend, right? That, you know, started a fund, like, I don't know, 30, 40 million. The first fund is his own money, right? And then had to raise another fund, puts 100 million, right? And then now that he has the results, and then he can be in, like, you know, it starts opening it up to people that want to partake, but he could take that risk. But we're talking about immigrants here, and how do we do it? It takes time. And then maybe your children, if they grow up and they want to do, that's how we break the cycle, right? Then they'll be able to get some help from you, right? It's a
absolutely, and I think there's nothing that beats it than hustle and like you said, curiosity and just trusting the process to putting in the reps. You know, I tell my team all the time is don't focus on the result, focus on the process because number one, you need to love the process, and number two, it's like the result is so it's the result is the most anticlimactic thing you probably will ever see. When you go to the New York Stock Exchange, ring the bell, and then you have nothing to do but twiddle your thumbs, you know, it should be a time to celebration, but in reality, you're just thinking about the next one and the next opportunity and the next founder you need to help, right? So it's incredibly anticlimactic if you're just focused on that finish line, right?
Yeah. And so I think that this is why I chose to start my fifth company, right? And not really start one, because this is not where my strengths lie. And I didn't want to be constantly asking for money from LPs to raise that kind of money, and then go and talk to entrepreneurs, convince them, and then pray to God that they would go and build the right companies and help themselves.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I said, you get to have 25 shots per fund. You can do that maybe four or five times in 10 years. So you can get 100 companies plus, right, in your portfolio to return a lot of money. But it's a big commitment and responsibility of your life to wait, you know, for, you know, 20 years, right?
Yeah.
And then that's 20 years. And then you can be a humongous success financially, but professionally. And we need more people like you. I decided to just, I like to go the one shot. It's my own shot, my company. And I have to make it successful. But I just love the journey, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good that you know yourself, look in the mirror, and you know what you love to do, right? Because I think that's another thing that Latino we don't have is the role models that I didn't have role models to kind of go ask, hey, what is it like to be a VC? What's it like to be an entrepreneur? I had to just kind of build it. And that's why I think that the networks that you build early, the social capital that you build early is so important, because you can then have surrogate parents-ish that could, you know, that could advise you, right? That could be mentors to you. And that's another thing you kind of have to build on your own versus others that could have grown up in Silicon Valley and have those as family friends, right? Or family, for that matter, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I think this has been an excellent journey, you know, and I think being able to tell people this is what it takes. Everybody wants to start from scratch. The good thing is that we have so many immigrants and so many Latinos. We can send some at 20 years old to go try to raise their fund, you know, and what is it called? What's the saying? I don't know. It's like, you got to burn your hands, or you got to like break your feet.
Yeah. You got to do it yourself and learn from your own mistakes, right?
Burn your mouth, burn your beak. I forget what the saying is. So you got to do that, right? At 20, or we send some, and I would say my mission is like, how do we send Latinos? Okay, go into the firms, go get analyst jobs at the investment banks and do whatever, bang on doors, play golf, be a caddy, whatever it takes to get in the door, send all the Latinos there, and that we can eventually have more people that build up the potential. I'm 48, right? I'm starting a fifth company, but I had to have a lot of shots on goal, a lot of
yeah, goals. That's exactly right.
To be able to raise the way I am. People want to raise at 20 what I did at 48. Good luck. But we can do both. There's plenty of people, there's plenty of money in this country, and this, you know, that would want to give you a shot. We got to do it. Yeah.
There's going to be trial and error, and people are going to make their own mistakes. But there's also a way to kind of learn the business. So one of the things I did is join the board of Somos VC, which is the biggest network of venture capital investors that are both Latino. And what we do is have a programming for people that want to break into the VCs as an associate. The associates want to get promoted to partners. So we have programming that I actually created that called Avanza Summit inside Somos. And what I do is I started teaching this class on venture capital at Stanford 7 years ago. So I use some of that material to kind of walk through what does it take to be a successful VC as an associate and then become a check writer as a partner. And then from that, how do you become a partner that has made DPI, right? So all those things are hard to do, but if you break them out, like you could go say, okay, let's first get break in, later let's become a partner, later let's become a partner that's successful and has made money. And then maybe you want to start your own firm. Those are all sort of big steps, and you want role models to kind of help you along the way. And so that's what we're trying to do with Somos is really help you along the way.
Yeah, but here I have you. You're the role model, right? You've done that. And
well, you are. That's why the podcast is so great. Yeah. You know, it's telling people, hey, you could do it. Hustle, trust the process, put your head down, network. Lots of things you could do.
We just want to inspire Latinos to see, like, look, and immigrants, right? Here you are, Sergio did it, put the time. You're young, you're at your peak right now. You got the experience, the network, and the resources. Go big or go home, right? And take those chances that you've been working towards. So it's just people have to have a clear understanding. It will take time. It's not going to be easy. Yeah. But we can do it. You're doing it. And thank you so much for being on the show, Sergio, and giving this like super intense, like, how does a VC firm work?
I've been accused of being too intense. So yeah. That's one thing that I have not been able to tone down that well.
And you never should you either. But anything you want to leave the audience with? What's a big call to action?
I think that YOLO, you know, it's like you only live once, man. Like, just go for it.
And take bigger swings, right? I think that we need to see it. Before you start making some goals, understand, like, how can you make your goals bigger?
That's it. And believe in yourself. I think trusting the process is another way to say trust yourself and your decisions and always try to make better decisions, right? I think decision quality is something that I never really appreciated, but the best entrepreneurs in VC have this incredible ability to make great decisions with limited amount of information. So I think judgment is hard to acquire and develop, right?
Yeah, it's called experience, and you need to fail.
for that reason.
Thank you so much, Sergio. This is great.
Sounds good. Thanks, Elias, and congrats, man.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss when a new episode drops every other Tuesday.